Mentors come in all forms. Over the last few months, I've been sitting down and talking with living legends, individuals whose innovations changed the world. In this podcast, I interview Art Fong. Art was part of the team that invented microwave during World War II, helped develop FM radio, and then joined HP when it was still a small startup. He went on to create innovations that at one point accounted for a staggering 30% of HP's revenues, while also playing a key role in reigniting education, technology, and innovation in China following the revolution. I apologize for the audio quality, but felt you hearing Art's story is worth the effort. Enjoy.
This is the Killer Innovations Podcast with Phil McKinney. Keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are Phil's and Phil's alone, and they don't necessarily reflect those of his past, current, or future employers. Now, here's Phil McKinney.
So how did you meet? So you came in through knowing Bill then.
MIT to see his classmates, I guess, and stuff. And he called me up and he said, Art, I'd like to come visit you. I guess he's heard about my work and he's seen some of my microwave stuff at the Signal Corps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I said, come up, visit me. I gave him my address and so forth. And then he shows up with a cab that night. And, nice thing about it, he's just a real nice guy. He's in uniform. He took off his hat, took off his jacket, took off his tie, and just sat down like a normal guy. We had a one-year-old baby at the time, not quite one, and next thing you know, he picks her up and then bounces around me while we were talking. So he just loves kids. You know,
mm-hmm.
Just fight himself. You know, so. And he was just a family man. We talked shop all day, you know. One up on another, I said, you have to do this and have done that and so on. So my wife was busy making spaghetti dinner those days. But everything was rationed those days. You can't buy meat, so much coffee, so much gasoline and so forth. And then we got through and he says, Art, he says, I'd like to have you come join us. He said, we're just small company starting, and we want to get into the microwave business. And of course, this is history.
You're showing here me a photograph. What you described as is the kind of the first police radar gun.
Oh yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about this and the work, you know, inventing this, and what was. Bill's reaction during, when you demonstrated it. How did the demonstration go?
Well, actually, while we were at MIT Labs, we had talked about it, various people and so on, but nobody had built one. So while I got to HP in 1946, and then I was up in San Francisco at all these surplus stores, and I see all this X-band gear up there, and I said, God. So for fun, I bought the parabola and some of the waveguide that went with it. And so I built a mixer using a Klystron, and the reflection was done by a crystal detector, and it runs through one of the HP counters. It's a linear counter. Back in those days, we had one. So as he was driving the car down the road, you can see the thing.
It was back to the Mercury station wagon, the company car going back and forth?
It was a pickup he was driving. Porter was driving that thing. So one, I forget what, one coffee break anyway, we all went out there and I said, I'm going to show the radar. And Hewlett got out for a while there, and he looks at me, yeah, that's real nice, Art. He says, I don't think we want to make it, though. He says, we're in the instrument business.
We're not in the radar. We're not in the radar gun business.
So it was about 20 years later before the commercial radar, police radar. Of course, they're a lot smaller now. It's only about that big and sticking out the side window. And this one here...
Well, this one here is about the size of a file cabinet.
And, you know, it's just the idea. This has just proved the idea, that's all, you know. So there's a lot of things that I designed that were patentable, and they never patented. For instance, like in the, for instance, these foam things they used in anti-echo chambers and so on. Mm-hmm. I did the first one when I came to HP. They used to use these resistant cards on the end of a waveguide to get a almost perfect match where you absorb all the energy. But these little foam things, foam triangles, or pyramids, foam pyramids, work much better. And we were using them in many of the products. Of course, now everybody's using it everywhere.
Yeah, for soundproofing booths.
Yeah,
and
yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. That came from HP. And nobody bothered to patent it.
And nobody bothered to patent it.
No, no. Well, I don't know what you'll do. It's a contribution to the electronic world. So.
So, tell me a funny story of Bill. You know, some memorable experience that kind of a funny story of. Of working with
Bill. Oh, and another one right away. We used to have a Mercury station wagon, which Dave drives, but it's also the company car that we use for various things. We had a IEEE meeting up in San Francisco. They're always in San Francisco for some reason. Now they're down here. They go on about once every couple months or so. And there was an interesting one that we decided to go, and we were all in the station wagon, and then we got to Cañado Road, and it was just being built, but for some reason or another, they got the thing all level off, but never got to a point where they put the pavement in. So there are lots of ruts. You know, dirt road would do that, you know, after rain and dry and so on. And you go there and you go through. And Bill says, see now, there must be a speed. I would think that way too. There must be a speed where I can just hit the tops of the bumps and it'll be a smooth ride. And we were trying speeds.
He's actually experimenting, trying to find the speed while you're on the dirt road. So you just hit the tops of the bumps.
Yeah. We were going all the way from 50 to 100 miles an hour. He was a reckless driver. You see why he didn't? And we never did find that speed.
I could see a station wagon full of engineers. It's all experiments on trying to find that perfect speed. And I could see someone writing down the numbers at the higher, nope, lower. Let's try this.
Yeah. That's, you know, that I remember that we had big laughs about that, and of course the stories told over and over again about that, and Dave, I remember, it's a little more serious. The 803 was a very unique piece of plumbing. Dave wanted to show it down in San Diego at a sonar convention. So I was hurrying to get data on it and how it works and so on. And so for a couple of nights, I've been staying late to finish it. And one night, at about 6:30 or so, in walks Dave. He's just come back from a meeting in San Francisco. And we sat down, and he said, "All right, how's it going?" He knew what I was doing. Then he looks at it and he says, he looks up the notebook and it looks pretty good. He says, "Okay," he said, "I'll tell you what, I'll write it down while you take the reading." Okay, so he sat down next to me and the president of the company doing that.
Sitting next to you, being your lab tech, writing down your entries in your logbook.
Yeah, so. We did that. Then he, about half an hour later, he said, "All right, have you had dinner yet?" He says, I said, no, not quite. I said, he says, you're going home. Take your time. And get something to eat and come back. So I lived only 2 miles away, so it was very easy. So when I came back, he was taking data and writing down someone. Then I said, Dave, you go home and get something to eat. And he said, no, he said, I'm not hungry. I had some snacks while I was in San Francisco. So we worked side by side till almost midnight and got it done. 2 days later, he carried the thing down to San Diego to show this at the meeting. So how come the boss would sit down and take data? Well, that's just typical. That's not the first time, but that was one of them.
Yeah.
So and Bill and Dave spent a long time in the labs. Of course, we only we got up to about 10 engineers. This was in the Redwood building. And they would sit down with each one and still doing and see what the problems are. And we'll talk about it. And so they know exactly what's going on, what status is. And they would make suggestions at times, you know, how, why don't you try this or that, and so on. So, that's just an example. He looked at the same thing, and, you know, and we loved it. So, you know, it's.
If you look back about everything, your career, everything from the microwave to everything through HP, if you had to pick one thing that you're most proud of, what would it be?
I think the spectrum analyzer would probably be it. That made the most dollars for HP.
Oh, yeah.
When that product came out, it sold for $10,000.
$10,000?
That was a lot of money in those days.
This was what year?
1965 or something like that.
Wow. Spectrum analyzer, 1965, $10,000 and $65. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. And Eldred's guys forecasted we may sell 25, 30 in 6 months or something. But actually, 6 months later, we were selling 100 a month. And so that makes $1 million. And that was the first $1 million product that HP had. So
it was the spectrum analyzer.
Yeah. But of course, now the other computer thing just.
What would be, you know, maybe some surprising fact or story that most people just don't know about HP?
Let's see. Of course, this was, aside from what I was doing, some guy, a friend of Hewlett, runs a lettuce farm down in Watsonville and south of here, and it was a laborious thing. They lots of seeds, they would plant all the seeds in a row and so on, and then they'll come by manual labor, and they would whack out when they were real small, when they were growing too close together, what they would do is run down there and they'll whack out the weak ones by hand and so forth. Some guy talked with Hewlett about this. They would have this tractor with this photocell that looks at the lettuce and so, and then take a whack and and take out every other one, and so that it gives room for the healthy one to grow. And they actually grow a big head of lettuce about that, so they're about maybe 8-9 inches apart. So. They don't want another one down here pushing on it, so it never really did work well. So
Hiller was trying to getting to design basically an automated agricultural tractor.
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit about you. You were one of the engineers that went with John Young to do the first visits to build the relationships with China.
Yeah.
So what was it like to be part of the kind of opening the door? What year was that?
That was 1979.
So 1979, going into China.
Yeah, we were the first American company to be invited to go there, because they had kind of loosened everything up, and the Gang of Four was over, and they decided that technology is one of the things that really ought to get to right now, and so they invited us in there, you know.
So what did you, what was it that, other than, you know, establishing HP, but also you were part of it also to try to help get the Chinese aware of technology and building companies and innovation?
Yeah, I didn't do the innovation, I mean the company part, but I did the technology part. I was invited back there in 81, 83, and 85 to do lectures or a series of lectures at different colleges back there, universities. And it was kind of a sad thing, as a matter of fact. I don't think China still hadn't caught up, but there's some brilliant minds in China, but they haven't been developed. I was lucky to have been brought over here by my parents in a cell, and then I was born here, and I had the chance to go to college. And in fact, I didn't intend to go to college. My teacher in high school forced me to go. She signed all the papers and had me sign my name, and UCLA just opened up. And it was a two-year college for engineering at the time, and he had just finished the last 2 years up at Berkeley. But anyway, over there, because of the revolution, the Communist Revolution, they had this Gang of Four, which went around. They closed down all the universities. So the whole country, so when we got there, that was over. So everyone was 20 years behind. The schools didn't teach the right subjects. All they teach was U over I equals R and things like that. Physics, hardly anything. So they listened very hard, except that I didn't speak Mandarin and we had an interpreter. Sometimes I'm a little disappointed because I may give a description that is 10, 15, 20 words. And he comes out with six. He's not telling. So. But fortunately, there was somebody who was recording it and redoing it. So they probably get the transcript, which is listened to. But the guy who did the translation supposedly know English, but it really is not very, very good at it.
But that kind of becomes the opening of the door for the West to have the influence. Yes. So you think about what you and the team from HP did in 79, 81, in that time frame, to now jump forward to think about, you're kind of the pebble in the water, and the ripple's going out, and now you look at the ripple effect of what China now has in the market. It's pretty amazing.
It is amazing.
I've met you now a couple of times involved with HP activities. And every time you and I have a conversation, you're always thinking about products that HP should do. And how old are you now?
90. Almost 90.
Almost 90. And you're still every day thinking about what products HP should build. It's amazing from the standpoint of... staying plugged in. What's the latest trends? What's going on? What is it you would like to have as a product?
Yeah, it turns out HP is my life. I worked for the company 40 years full time, and then 10 years part time after I retired.
What year did you retire then?
86, and then 96, 2 days, 1996. The only reason why I retired the last time, I was working just part-time on little things and so on. And actually, I was getting more calls from people who want to know about the technology that we had worked on many years ago. And they want to know something about it or continue on it or use it again or something like that. And so a lot of HP stuff. And that was my consulting, and I enjoyed it. I was here mostly in the afternoons. So that's my life.
So do you still get calls from like the Edgeland team?
Once in a while somebody will call me, or email me. They have my email address, so I email a lot too, every night. And it's great. I feel good about helping people. And
well, Art, well, I want to thank you for taking the time to come in.
Sure, yeah.
It's been great.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Please send your feedback. Particularly, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on doing these kinds of interviews. The objective is to give you a broader exposure to others that are out there creating killer innovations. If you found this podcast interesting and you want to connect with other innovators, join the network. There's killer innovation groups now in existence over on LinkedIn and Facebook and a variety of the social sites. Also, feel free to follow me over on Twitter. Just do a follow, Phil McKinney. Also, pay it forward. For those of you that are regular listeners of the podcast, you know that my sole objective in the podcast is to pay it forward as a return to my early mentors. And when I asked them how to pay it back, they told me later in my career to pay it forward to others. All I ask is that you pay it forward. Thanks for the time out of your busy schedule. Look forward to talking to you real soon. Bye-bye.